You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
John Lithgow won his first Tony Award when he appeared naked on Broadway stage nearly 40 years ago, and he's recently been nominated for another Tony for another performance that requires nudity, playing Joseph Alsop in the Manhattan Theater Club's production of The Columnist, now in an extended run at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater. He joins us to talk about the play, along with its author, David Auburn, who's won a Tony and a Pulitzer Prize for Proof, and by Grace Gummer, who plays Joseph Alsop's stepdaughter, Abigail. And I'm very pleased to welcome you all to our show.
Nice Thanks. To be here.
Thank you.
John, when you were here the last time, it was to discuss your memoir, Drama and Actor's Education. You told me it had been challenging for you to appear on stage naked in the changing room at the start of your career. Has it gotten easier with 4 decades of theater, movies, and TV under your belt, or since the lower half of your body is covered by a sheet in the scene, are you really even doing it in the nude?
I am certainly doing it in the nude.
I think we should say John is naked in the studio right now.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, but next to the word nudity in the dictionary, there's a picture of me naked.
You personify nakedness.
You know, I guess it has gotten easier just because, like, by now I feel like I gave up shame long, long ago. And also, I don't know, I sort of believe in the uses of nudity. It sounds ridiculous, but I think it is like the most potent image on stage, as long as it's used well. And we had a sense that this play had to open with an extremely unsettling image.
And David, that works. It's kind of shocking for the audience. John's character, Joseph Alsop, is naked, and we learn that he's in Moscow, and he's just had sex with a young Russian man named Andrei, whom he'd picked up at a bar. By starting the play that way, you were able to communicate a great deal of information immediately.
Right. Well, this was a central event in Joe's life, and one of the things that created a crisis that I think he lived with for many years, that he had been entrapped during a visit to Moscow in the late 50s, and had been the victim of a blackmail attempt by the KGB because they had photographed him in a room with this young man. And I knew I wanted to use that in the play. It seemed central. And starting the play, I experimented with a lot of different places to put it, but starting the play with it felt right, because you meet Joe in a moment where he's both extremely vulnerable and open to a conversation with this interesting stranger. And also, he's at the top of his game at this time in the 50s, because he was already very powerful and fighting the good fight back home against McCarthyism. And being able to meet him at a point of both vulnerability and power and confidence seemed really interesting.
Since he's a closeted homosexual.
Right.
What did the KGB, do we know what the KGB hoped to gain by blackmailing him? Would he write more friendly columns, less anti-communist columns?
Yeah, he was a vociferous anti-communist, but he was a respectable one. You know, he wasn't a John Bircher. He was a liberal New Deal Democrat. He had been a confidant of Franklin Roosevelt, and he was a hardline Cold Warrior. So I think that they probably hoped, I don't know how well thought out the plan was, but I think they probably hoped that they could shame him into easing up. The opposite happened.
And they were probably equal opportunity blackmailers. It's not inconceivable that they felt this was the thin end of the wedge, that they could actually somehow coerce him and own him.
And he did the brave thing. He revealed to the FBI that this blackmailing was taking place, and despite the fact that that really made him even more vulnerable, it just undermined the KGB's plan.
Yeah, he took those pictures once they had been shown to him, and he went straight to the State Department. He must have known that that would make him very vulnerable to people like J. Edgar Hoover back home, but he took that risk. In the play, I have him say, if I'm going to be destroyed, I'd rather be destroyed by my country than yours. But that's speculation.
That's a very good line reading, I might add.
I've been practicing at home.
Now, Grace, on other matters, I've seen you on TV recently in Smash, but hasn't most of your acting experience been in the theater?
Yeah, actually. When I got out of school, I was in an off-Broadway play, and since then have done a couple other plays. But yeah, before this was Arcadia, which was right down the street. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to be back on 47th Street again.
Well, you come out of a family now of actors. Your sister, your mother, your father's a sculptor, mm-hmm. A noted sculptor. Is your younger sister, Louisa, who's still in college, going to go into the arts, or are we going to see another actress in the family?
She might. We don't really know. She's the sort of elusive, mysterious one. John calls her my phantom sister.
She finally came to the show last night.
Yes.
Finally met the phantom.
Yes.
Finally came to the show.
Yeah, well she's been in school.
Schoolwork.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, David, Joseph Alsop was a widely read syndicated columnist, died in 1989 at the age of 78, and your play takes place mostly during the 60s when he was at the height of his power, maintained a personal friendship with John and Bobby Kennedy. Was he being accurate when he bragged that he could do more than just write about the course of politics, that he actually could change it as well?
Yes. I think he was one of maybe a handful of men, journalists at that time, who had that kind of influence. And he was regularly called in to consult with the Kennedys and with LBJ after the assassination. He had politicians quaking in fear of what he would write. I think he was able to shame LBJ or to at least scare LBJ into escalating the Vietnam War. A lot of people perceived it that way. There's a famous quote where LBJ, after increasing troop levels, said, maybe that'll keep Joe Alsop happy for a little while. And to have a columnist with that kind of power is no longer something for better and worse, I think, mostly for better, that we have anymore. There's been this democratization of opinion. It's scattered. There are thousands of blogs instead of a handful of five people who have that kind of authority. And it seemed interesting to look back at a time when things were so different.
There was Scotty Reston. There were a few others who had similar power, but I think Alsop probably wielded it more than most. Wasn't your original idea to write a play about the lead-up to the Iraq War? How did you wind up with Joe Alsop in Vietnam?
Right. Iraq was on my mind very much, and the role that the press played in getting us into that war. I just took a sort of sidestep and was also reading about the Vietnam era, coincidentally, just because I was interested in it. I realized I didn't know very much about it. I was trying to chip away a little bit at my own ignorance. And this name also kept coming up, sometimes in footnotes. And it was clear that he was a very influential, very famous man, almost a household name, who had now become almost completely forgotten. And
any idea why?
Vietnam. I think that over the course of the Vietnam era, his increasingly strident pro-war writing first turned him into a kind of joke and a symbol of everything that was wrong about the sort of establishment views on Vietnam, and led to him being forgotten very quickly.
Well, we see Judith Miller making a comeback on Fox News now. So perhaps today he would have had a second life somewhere else. But he was also really very outsized, wasn't he, John? You said that you've actually had to, after watching him some of his appearances on television, you decided you just had to pull back a bit.
Yes, I do feel it's a big-sized performance, no doubt about it, but I do feel that I've moderated it a bit. He was extraordinary. In the course of all this, I've met a lot of people who knew Alsop very well, and all of them, they speak of him like a force of nature, this extraordinary combination of camp and bombast, a huge temper, and yet they all loved him. He was an extremely generous man, and it's what makes him so fascinating, his abrasiveness and his generosity.
And Grace, you have a scene near the end of the play in which you reveal just how much affection you have for him. You're his stepdaughter. Your politics are quite different. You would think that having lived under his tyranny at times, that you would have had a very different take.
Yeah, you know, I think it's the sort of a side of Joe you never see in the play otherwise. I mean, it's the compassionate and sort of human side of him that I think the audience can sympathize with. I know actually that the woman that my character is based on was extremely influenced by Joe and was shaped by him. And I met her and I asked her if she was ever scared of him, and she said, "No, you got to bully a bully." So I think she went to, you know, head to head with him.
But she was the daughter of a prominent Washington figure. Mm-hmm. But was she a public figure herself?
No.
So you really didn't have the sort of public record that Joe Alsop and even the woman who is your character's mother would have had.
Yeah, no, not at all. I had David's words.
And she's sort of an invented character, a composite character of a couple of the stepkids.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've invented a lot here. I mean, how much is what you have these characters say based on the public record, and how much of it is just out of your imagination?
It's pretty much all made up. I mean, I think that the play hews very closely to the facts, the known facts of the broad outline of what was going on in their lives. But the play is about what they say to each other in living rooms and, you know, bars when no one's listening. So it's a very much invented, a kind of imagined version of their lives.
Although you could pretty much feel secure and that similar things actually happened.
Yeah, and the great thing about writing about these people is that they all wrote. You know, Joe wrote memoirs and letters, and Susan Mary, his wife, published her letters, and it was easy to get a very full sense of what their voices sounded like and what they were involved in.
He's often described as something of a monster. Did you grow to like him more or less while you were working on the play?
I admire him. I mean, his politics are probably close to the exact opposite of mine, but I admired his erudition and his vociferousness and, you know, to the extent that the play is about someone who clings so tenaciously to a set of convictions, even in the face of his own destruction, there's a lot to be admired there. And he was beloved, you know, so trying to figure out how that worked. I mean, how can someone who has such a bullying reputation also have inspired so much affection? That was a really interesting puzzle to try to figure out.
John, your politics were quite different, or are quite different as well. But you say you wanted to play Alsop as soon as you read the play. What drew you to him?
The play. The play is, it's a fantastic piece of writing. It's a great characterization of Joe Alsop, who was an extraordinarily complex and contradictory man. It's a six-character play, which means Joe has five quite unique relationships, all of which bring something else out of him. And a wonderful brother relationship with Stuart, played by Boyd Gaines, a marvelous actor, and his kind of artificial show marriage with Susan Mary Alsop, a marriage of convenience to present himself socially in Washington, his stepdaughter relationship, and his rival's relationship with David Halberstam.
But this is not the first time you've played a power-mad columnist. Mm-hmm. I remember you in Sweet Smell of Success, although you don't sing in this one.
No. I only sing
in my dressing
room.
Are you specializing? Backstage.
Well, you know, in fact, this is the fifth time I've played a journalist. I've been on the front page and Mr. and Mrs. Fitch and even the Pelican Brief in the movies. I don't know. They keep coming after me for journalists, but they are extraordinarily.
You type so well. Maybe that's the reason.
My typing has improved. But they are extraordinarily dramatic characters. I mean, Orson Welles knew that when he framed Citizen Kane as a journalistic story. These are people who go after the drama of real life. And, you know, all of us woke up this morning and listened to the news because that's the major drama in our lives.
The Columnist has been extended through July 1st at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater on 47th Street off of 8th Avenue. This is the second extension. And I'm talking with John Lithgow, who stars as Joseph Alsop. also David Auburn, who wrote the play, and Grace Gummer, who is quite wonderful as Joseph Alsop's stepdaughter, Abigail. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with David Auburn, the Tony and Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright, whose latest play is The Columnist. It has just been given another extension for its run at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater on West 47th Street and 8th Avenue. Also with us is John Lithgow, who is the Tony and also Emmy Award-winning actor. And God knows how many other awards. We'll get to that in a moment. He stars as Joseph Alsop. And Grace Gummer, who plays Joseph Alsop's stepdaughter, Abigail. This is your first Broadway appearance?
My second Broadway appearance.
Oh, right. You were in Arcadia.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like, how old are you?
I'm 26.
Uh-huh. So this is a career that's developing in a normal way.
Yeah. You know, I'm learning all these great things about being an actor and being on stage on the highest pedestal.
Well, you have
amazing actors and
here.
Yeah, and playwrights and directors, so it's pretty, I feel so lucky.
Well, this is definitely, as you pointed out, John, despite the fact that you're on stage pretty much every moment, this is an ensemble production. And I always wonder in those kinds of plays whether the whole thing just falls apart if one actor isn't up to all the others.
Well, we have no idea. We're all functioning on the same level. No, it's a great ensemble. I do have a bigger part than everybody. That means everybody else has far more fun. They're upstairs in the dressing rooms drinking whiskey in my big endless last scene.
Well, you said you were really tired when you were waiting to come in to do the show. This play really drains your energy?
It's exhausting. I just feel like I'm tired all the time, except when I'm on stage. And I have this deep voice. I feel like Boris Christoph this morning. But it's exactly what I look for. You know, some gigantic challenge. And somehow or other, I seem to turn every role into King Lear. This is... I hadn't intended to play Joe quite so big, but that's what I end up doing.
Well, you were planning to do a one-man play when this part came along, your play,
yeah.
Based on your life, the memoir and the play working together. Doesn't that tire you out when you're the only person on the stage?
Oh, yes. Yeah, of course it does. I had actually done a six-week run of that play, eight performances a week. I call it a play. It's a one-man show. I will do it eventually in New York, but I knew I could do it anytime. This play was coming up, and I couldn't stand the thought of anybody else playing Joe.
But in that case, you're performing lines that you've written.
Yes, but
is that very different than when you're performing lines that somebody else has written for you?
Oh, for sure. It's also very conversational. I mean, the whole point of my solo show is to kind of blur the lines between a conversation and a performance. There is a certain point in that show at which I begin to perform, and my notion is that it sort of dawns on the audience, he's not John anymore, you know. So it's actually not that taxing.
But,
I'm just talking to people.
I know some people will get upset when I say this, but when the star comes out at the beginning of a play and the audience applauds, I get upset because I feel that they're not. This is a character. You're Joseph Alsop when that play begins. You're not John Lithgow, and so it's kind of. It's throwing me off. I'm ready to accept you as the character you're playing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a tricky thing because it's going to happen or it isn't.
It's also the beginning, the very beginning of the play. So I think people, when the curtain goes up and the music starts, they're excited anyway. And then they see John and they're more excited.
And then they wait until they can give you the standing O.
Yeah.
Well, we don't get those anymore ever since Ben Brantley wrote about it.
Yeah.
The Columnist is directed by Daniel Sullivan, who also directed Proof, David. Should I assume you enjoy working together?
I love working with Dan. I think he's the best director that we've got, and there's just a weight of experience of decades of working in the theater behind everything Dan does. So you just feel like you're in the most confident, calmest, best of hands.
And when you were casting this, how much of this was how involved were you, and how much of it was his decision?
It's a conversation, I wouldn't want anyone in the show that Dan didn't feel good about, and I think he feels the same way. So everything with him is collaborative. It's a very nice relationship.
Stephen Kuenken, who plays David Halberstam in this, was in Proof as well.
I think I've done 5 or 6 shows with Steve over the years.
Is there something to be gained by performing with the same people again and again, or is there something exciting about being with somebody you've never performed with?
Well,
before?
Both. The nice thing about rejoining another actor is it's just great. It just reminds you what a community we're all in.
Mm-hmm. You know, playwrights used to write for companies. For most of history, that's what you did, and you wrote a role because you knew you had someone in the company who could do it, and we don't get to do that anymore. But the closest thing we have to that is returning again to work with friends or work with people who we've worked with before.
Well, we've heard about playwrights writing a part with someone in mind. Sometimes that actor actually winds up playing the part. Sometimes they don't.
Right.
Often the different actor gives all sorts of surprises that the playwright wasn't ready for, but might be excited by. How has that worked with you? I mean, with Mary Louise Parker, I understand from some of the people who appeared in Proof with her, they never knew what she was going to be that night. So it was like being with a different actor every night.
Yeah. No, I didn't write that role with anyone in mind. And it was one of the exciting things about that whole experience was watching the 3 or 4 different actors who came into it, Mary Louise, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Anne Heche, Gwyneth Paltrow, each do something different with it. With this play, I try not to let myself think about who's going to play the role while I'm writing it, because I feel like it's sort of a bad karma, you know, you're getting ahead of yourself. But once we started talking about John, and once he came in to read it for the first time, it was like a lightning bolt. I mean, there was this fully formed, passionate performance that was there from the very beginning. It was very exciting.
Well, you had to trust that Grace, who is 26, as she just revealed, could play a 14-year-old in the first scene that we meet her in.
How do you do that, Grace?
Was that scary?
Well, I wear a sports bra first. Yeah, you know, at first it was very intimidating in my audition, actually, because I didn't really know how I could go back to that age, but I quickly realized it's a lot easier than I thought.
Well, it's easy for you. We none of us can imagine any other actor doing what Grace does in this. She ages from 14 to 22 or 3, and it's an incredible transformation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really feel like you've lived a long time with this person in these relationships.
Because with adults, the difference between 1958 and 1963 isn't all that much. With a kid, it's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Definitely.
My guests are all connected to The Columnist, which is now in an extended run at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater. I am talking with Grace Gummer, who plays Joseph Alsop's stepdaughter, Abigail, with John Lithgow, who plays Joseph Alsop, and with David Auburn, who wrote the play. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopez. Dave, Proof was adapted into a film. One of your short plays called What Do You Believe About the Future was as well.
Right.
Is this material for a film, or is this too complicated for a movie?
There's been some talk. I mean, I think it could be a very interesting movie. It takes you into this. It's about an era, you know, so... But right now it lives so comfortably on the stage. I'm just enjoying watching it during this run.
They just have to wait till Brad Pitt is available.
The Tony Awards will be announced on June 10th. And, John, this is your 6th nomination. You've won twice for The Changing Room in 1973 and Sweet Smell of Success in 2002. You've also won 5 Emmys, 3 Drama Desk Awards, 2 Golden Globes, 2 SAGs. Do you ever get blasé about this?
Oh,
Does the excitement ever diminish a little bit?
Not at all. especially with the Tonys. You get nominated for Tony, and you're still doing the play. It adds a certain excitement, and a very, very good and very competitive category, so I'm perfectly ready not to win.
But if you're up for an Oscar, you can see what the competition has done. Mm-hmm. If you're appearing on Broadway,
you can't see it.
No, I've seen a couple of them. I saw James Corden and I saw Philip Seymour Hoffman, and I defer to both of them.
Well, I've seen both of them, and they give amazing performance. James Corden has to be one of the funniest men.
Just brilliant.
He's coming on our show next week, by the way.
You will have such a good
time. To talk
about
One Man, Two Governors. If you lose, you don't feel so bad because the competition is so strong?
Yeah, exactly. I fully expect to lose, which is a good attitude, I think. I'm a loser by nature.
David, there was a time when it was really hard to get a serious drama on Broadway. Has that changed because we're seeing so many?
Well, the fact that we have now, I think, three soon to be four nonprofit theaters that have Broadway houses has changed that completely. It's a great thing. It's one of the healthiest developments, I think, in the New York theater, that a theater like MTC can put a play like this on its Broadway stage and take the risk that represents, and that can happen three times a year, really, in that theater.
Now, John, you starred opposite Meryl Streep in Arthur Miller's A Memory of Two Mondays in 1976. At that time, she was probably just a few years older than Grace is now.
Mm-hmm.
Several critics have noted that Grace looks a bit like Meryl did at that time. Do you ever feel like you're having a flashback?
I've known Grace since she was a little girl. I think 8 years old is when I first knew Gracie.
Mm-hmm.
I must say...
You know her long enough to call her Gracie.
Well, somehow that's emerged in the last 2 months. But, my first couple of days of work, she certainly did remind me uncannily of Meryl. Literally after those 48 hours, it was gone. She was her own person completely. And she's a very different actor in so many ways. Completely wonderful to act with on stage. So it's a non-issue.
Well, that has to be something that you are asked a lot about, whether acting was something that was discussed over the dinner table or whether it's just something that where you actually wanted to find your own way as an actor. After all, your mother and a sister had preceded you.
Yeah. I think I try to work hard to pave my own path for myself. It came up sort of organically. I didn't know that I wanted to start doing it until I got out of college and I realized that I could sort of make a living doing it.
Doing fine. John, it's startling to see how many cigarettes Joseph Alsop smokes during the play. You look pretty natural with a cigarette in your hand. How difficult is it to look like you're a smoker? Are you a former smoker?
I've never been a smoker, but I've smoked in a lot of roles. So I've worked very hard on it being natural because smokers can spot a non-smoker from a mile off. Mm-hmm. I mean, with Joe smoking, he used a cigarette holder, at least late in his life. He was a huge smokestack of a smoker. I heard the figure that he smoked 90 cigarettes a day. I mean, a chain smoker, as many people were back then. He did just the artifice of just the business of manipulating a cigarette holder is a wonderful affectation, so I just make good use of it.
Well, I'm noticing that your voice is a little deeper than it was before you started playing this role. As I mentioned earlier, The Columnist has been extended through July 1st at the Samuel J. Friedman. It's already been extended twice. Has there been any discussion, David, about extending the play's run again?
Well, we're kind of up against the limit in that theater. Beyond that, I really don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, if anyone can't get to see the play, the script of The Columnist has just been published by Faber and Faber, hasn't
right.
it?
Yep.
That's an imprint of Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. When I read it, will I be able to imagine everything that I see on the stage? Well, first of all, I can't see the sets. And the sets are just marvelous.
This is a big, they're by John Lee Beatty, and it's a very big production. I think it's the biggest, certainly the biggest play I've ever written, and it takes you all over the world. The physical production is spectacular.
Just one more thing, Grace. I gather that you and your siblings made up plays together. You always got the bad part. Is this a kind of a change for you?
Well, I you know, I'm a middle child, so I was always bossed around by my older siblings. I was usually the dog with a leash around my neck or something.
That's a good part.
Yeah, no, I'm so over the moon about being in this play and so incredibly lucky to share the stage with John and Margaret and Boyd and Stephen, everybody else. It's just such a pleasure.
And my thanks to the three of you for being on our show, Grace Gummer, John Lithgow, and David Auburn. We've been talking about the current production of The Columnist at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you.